Welcome to the Amherst Wesleyan Church Sermon Podcast.
We're in Ezekiel. We're going to be looking at chapters 33 to 35, and we're just going to get right into it. Turn with me to chapter 33. I'm going to start reading verses 1 to 9. I'm going to be reading from the Message, so it might sound a little bit different than what you've got there, but just follow along. God's message came to me, "Son of man, speak to your people. Tell them, if I bring war on this land and the people take one of their citizens and make him their watchman, and if the watchman sees war coming and blows the trumpet warning the people, then if anyone hears the sound of the trumpet and ignores it and war comes and takes him off, it's his own fault. He heard the alarm. He ignored it. It's his own fault. If he had listened, he would have saved his life. But if the watchman sees war coming and doesn't blow the trumpet, warning the people, and the war comes and takes anyone off, I'll hold the watchman responsible for the bloodshed of any unwarned sinner. You, son of man, are the watchman. I've made you a watchman for Israel. The minute you hear a message from me, warn them. If I say to the wicked, wicked man, wicked woman, you're on the fast track to death, and you don't speak up and warn the wicked to change their ways, the wicked will die unwarned of their sin, and I'll hold you responsible for their bloodshed. But if you warn the wicked to change their ways and they don't do it, they'll die in their sins well warned, and at least you will have saved your own life. God's telling Ezekiel here pretty clear, isn't he? You're my watchman. And when I tell you something, you got to speak it. You got to speak it. It's not Ezekiel's thoughts on what the people should be doing. It's what God is saying needs to happen. Right? And I get it. That can be hard. And we're called to be watchmen here in our community, with our families, with the people we rub shoulders with. But it's hard, right? And fear can sneak in there. The fear of what could happen. When I started dating in my late teens, I would be in a relationship, and then it would break off. And my dad would come to me and he'd say, "Cheryl, what happened?" And I'd explain, and he'd go, "Well, I saw that." And this happened more than once. And I'm like, "Dad, like, why aren't you telling me what you're seeing?" And finally, he didn't tell me at the beginning, but finally he told me why. And it was fear based on something that happened in his own life, a deep wound. My dad never knew his father. My great-grandparents got between my grandfather and my grandmother and split them up. So my dad was afraid to say anything about any relationship or potential relationship that I would have because he was afraid of the consequences. But what he failed to see was that there would be consequences if I ended up with the wrong person. And praise God that didn't happen. But we are to warn. There's a reason that we are to warn for the consequences for that. But there's also something else that we can't miss here, folks. And that is, if we become so afraid that we're not going to tell people about the things that God blatantly says are wrong and are hurtful and destructive in their lives, that sin, we get comfortable with it. Right? It starts to be a little easier to be around. When we stop fighting for people by warning them, and that's the people right here in this room too, folks. We don't always get it right. It's not just unbelievers, right? When we're doing something wrong, we have to come alongside each other, and we have to warn each other. We have to fight for each other. Because when we don't, we get lost too. Because we get to that point where sin's okay. Whew. Nice heavy place to start, isn't it? Okay, let's go 33, verse 11, and then we're going to jump to 35. Tell them, as sure as I am the living God, I take no pleasure from the death of the wicked. I want the wicked to change their ways and live. Turn your life around. Reverse your evil ways. Why die, Israel? Over to 35. God's message came to me. Son of man, confront Mount Seir. Prophesy against it. Tell them, God the Master says, I'm coming down hard on you, Mount Seir. I'm stepping in and turning you to a pile of rubble. I'll reduce your towns into piles of rocks. There'll be nothing left of you. Then you'll realize that I am God. I'm doing this because you've kept this age-old grudge going against Israel. You viciously attacked them when they were already down, looking their final punishment in the face. Therefore, as sure as I am the living God, I am lining up for you a real bloodbath. Since you love blood so much, you'll be chased by rivers of blood. I'll reduce Mount Seir to a heap of rubble. No one will either come or go from that place. I'll blanket your mountains with corpses. Massacred bodies will cover your hills and fill up your valleys and ditches. I'll reduce you to ruins, and all your towns will be ghost towns, population zero. Then you'll realize that I am God. Because you said, these two nations, these two countries are mine, I'm taking over, even though God is right there watching, right there listening, I'll turn your hate-bloated anger and rage right back on you. You know I mean business when I bring judgment on you. You'll realize then that I, God, have overheard all the vile abuse you poured out against the mountains of Israel, saying, they're roadkill, and we're going to eat them up. You've strutted around talking so big, instantly pitting yourselves against me, and I've heard it all. This is the verdict of God, the Master, with the whole earth applauding, I'll demolish you. Since you danced in the streets thinking it was so wonderful when Israel's inheritance was demolished, I'll give you the same treatment. Demolition. Mount Seir, demolished. Yes, every square inch of Edom. They'll realize that I am God. Tell them, as sure as I am the living God, I take no pleasure from the death of the wicked. I want the wicked to change their ways and live. Turn your life around. Reverse your evil ways. God doesn't like punishing people. He doesn't want it. But he is a God of justice, and he is a holy God, and he won't stand for it. He can't. But it's not what he wants. He wants people to come to him. My older brother and I, we're pretty close now, but when I was 11 and he was just starting high school, not so much. I was super awkward preteen. I know, hard to believe, right? But it was pretty bad. And he was starting high school, and he wanted so badly to be the cool guy that Cheryl was way over there. I'm not even coming close to her. And the church that we attended had a morning and an evening service. And evening service, a lot of the teens liked to wear jeans and stuff, and my dad wouldn't have it. For him, jeans were work clothes, and it was disrespectful. And my brother decided he was going to sneak out the house with jeans on. It was winter, it was dark, and we had a basement door, so he sneaks out and he gets in the car. And I'm already in the car, and he gets in, and I see his jeans. And I go, he's going to get it in my head, right? I was feeling pretty smug. I wouldn't say he was my enemy, but we weren't best of friends, right? Do you find yourself saying the same thing sometimes? That politician or that famous person does something and it's really, really not good, and they get caught and they get fined heavily for it, and we find ourselves cheering about it. Or there's a murderer, a thief, or a drug dealer, or a pedophile, and they get their day in court and they get a heavy sentence, and we say, good. Now, don't get me wrong. God is about justice, and he wants justice. But he does not delight in people being punished, and neither should we. When my brother was punished, I had no joy. After his punishment, I had no joy. Joy does not come from watching people get what they deserve. Joy comes from the grace of God. God's grace that gives people another chance. God forgiving people and seeing their lives changed. Instead of being happy that they got what they deserved, we should be sad. Sad that God hasn't gotten a hold of their hearts. Sad that they have no hope. And that's the key there, folks, is that we have to hold on to hope for them, right? When we stop fighting for them and we start cheering because they get punished for what they've done wrong, something happens to us. Right? We become prideful. We become selfish. We have to hold on to hope that people will change. Right? We have to hope that they're going to listen. That they're going to heed the warnings. We've got to hope that they're going to stop and that they'll do it differently. And this last one's hard, but we have to hope that our enemies get saved. Right? It's pride and selfishness that brings us to that place where we cheer. When we stop fighting for people and hoping for them, we get lost because pride and selfishness grows. Okay. Chapter 34, verses 1 to 16. God's message came to me, son of man, prophesy against the shepherd leaders of Israel. Yes, prophesy. Tell those shepherds of Israel feeding their own mouths, aren't shepherds supposed to feed sheep? You drink the milk. You make clothes from the wool. You roast the lambs, but you don't feed the sheep. You don't build up the weak ones. Don't heal the sick. Don't doctor the injured. Don't go after the strays. Don't look for the lost. You bully and badger them. And now they're scattered every which way because there was no shepherd. Scattered and easy pickings for wolves and coyotes. Scattered, my sheep, exposed and vulnerable across mountains and hills. My sheep all over the world and no one out there looking for them. Therefore, shepherds, listen to the message of God. As sure as I am the living God, decree of God, the Master, because my sheep have been turned into mere prey, into easy meals for wolves, because you shepherds ignored them and only fed yourselves, listen to what God has to say. Watch out. I'm coming down on the shepherds, and I'm taking back my sheep. They're fired as shepherds of my sheep. No more shepherds who just feed themselves. I'll rescue my sheep from their greed. They're not going to feed off of my sheep any longer. God the Master says, from now on, I myself am the shepherd. I'm going looking for them. God's calling out the priests and the prophets here, isn't he? You're supposed to be caring for the people around you, and instead, you've gotten so focused on yourself that you don't see anybody out there. And even worse than that, you've gotten so focused on yourself, you're pushing people away. And you've pushed them away so far, they've gone to the mountains and the hill country, the risky places. This is a little uncomfortable, isn't it? And we can find ourselves sidestepping a bit here and going, but that's not me. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a priest. Turn with me to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2. We're going to read verses 9 and 10. But you are the ones chosen by God, chosen for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be a holy people, God's instruments to do his work and speak out for him, to tell others of the night and day difference he made for you, from nothing to something, from rejected to accepted. Guess what? We are the priesthood, aren't we? That's our job. That's our job. Two years into our marriage, we had one vehicle. Dwayne went to work. I had a couple meetings. We were living in North York, Toronto at that point. And I had to take subway and bus to get to these meetings. And the transit was an absolute mess that day. And I didn't get lunch because of the timing of everything. And I got to the second meeting, and it was in the lady's house, and she was Lebanese, and she was making this fantastic food. And the whole time we're having this meeting, I can smell it. And I'm starting to drool, all right? But anyway, I'm keeping focused, and we do the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, she so graciously says to me, "You must have had a long day. Would you like something to eat?" And you know that verge of just before you're hangry, right? That's exactly where I was. And I went, yes, I would love that. And so she gives me this bowl of food and I scarf it down, right? And then I go downstairs, go out to the parking lot, and Dwayne says to me, "Why were you like 15, 20 minutes late?" And I said, "Well, I was really hungry, and she gave me this really great food, and it was so tasty." And he looked at me, and he went, "Well, I was hungry, too." And he was serious, like he was not kidding. And my heart sank. I was so focused on myself that I couldn't even think of my husband. Squirrels go out in late summer and early fall, and they collect nuts and seeds and pine cones. I don't know what else they chew on, but they collect all this stuff up, and they put it in trees, right? And they dig themselves holes, and they bury it all away. And they don't find half of it when it comes to winter. Not half of it. They're so focused on themselves and getting everything together that other creatures can't get it. It just rots. And that's what happens to us. When we get so focused on ourselves and meeting our wants, the things that we think we need, we become just useless. Just useless. And that's what God's saying here. He's saying your food, your clothes, your house, your stuff. You're so focused on all of that that you're missing the people around you who are struggling. He's saying you've stopped helping others. You've stopped looking for the people who are lost. And you've even chased some people away. We have to keep helping people with what we have. Right? We aren't here for us. We need to use what we have to bless others. We have to use what we have to find others. We have to be willing to take that risk, right? To go to the places that they've gone to. We can't be so consumed with our problems, our wants, our issues, our worries, that that's all we have time and energy for. Because when we do that, when we become self-centered, we become utterly useless. We become lost. We've just celebrated Easter a few weeks ago, right? Jesus lived, died, and rose again to give people abundant life from the moment they decide to follow him. It's not about heaven. That's a perk, folks. Abundant life begins that moment. And when we start focusing on ourselves, we miss that. We miss that entirely. Worship team, you can come up now, please. People, we're responsible for our actions, right? And the people that we warn, the people that we care for, they're responsible for their actions too. But God's making it incredibly clear here in chapter 33 that we are responsible. When we abandon our call, when we stop following the example of Jesus, and stop doing what God clearly tells us, we become lost. We must fight for the lost. We must warn people so we don't become numb to sin, right? We have to hope for and celebrate their transformation so that pride and selfishness don't grow in our hearts. And we need to stay focused on the people around us and not become self-centered. They may not listen. They may ignore the warning and be lost. But they may listen. They may choose God. They may be found and be transformed. Folks, we can't stop forgetting. We can't for a moment forget that when you stop fighting for the lost, you get lost.
Thanks for listening and being part of our church and joining us in this journey to become down-to-earth people following Jesus in down-to-earth ways.